All right, my guest today, Corey, is an author and a pastor who has a deep faith in God. And the way he explains it, the way we covered it in the show is he believes that it's only through God that we can fulfill our inherent cravings and live a happy, peaceful, meaningful life. And he's actually written a book about it. You'll see the link in the notes, called The Magnetic Heart of God, Understanding the Five Cravings of Your Soul. And as you'll hear in this book, Corey's belief is that there's five kind of inherent cravings that we all have. And we spent the conversation understanding those cravings, Corey's view of them. Also asking, you know, why is he so confident that these cravings are spiritual in nature and not biological, which is a big part of the discussion. And also, what does it actually mean to embrace God to fulfill those cravings? We hear those types of phrases a lot, but really pressure testing it and understanding, what does it mean practically, tangibly? Somebody wanted to try and embrace God starting tomorrow, what would they actually do? And I have to say, I love the chance to talk to someone with deep spiritual beliefs, especially someone as open as Corey to examining and questioning them. It just leads to such like a fruitful, productive, insightful learning conversation. And I thank Corey for that. And I hope you guys enjoy it. All right, Corey, thank you so much for being here. Really excited to talk to you today. I like to dive right in as always, so I will do that now and ask you, what's the value, the belief, the perspective that's most important to you?
I would say the value of the belief and perspective is that this is not all there is. That life is more than what we see when we open the curtains in the morning. Life is more what we see than the reflection looking back at us in the mirror. Okay. And I think that all of us know this on some level. And yet very few of us are living like it. Right. And so to me, I think that is a profound and encouraging outcome of my belief, is that this is not all there is. And that to me is very hopeful, because as we look at the world around us, if we were to think that this was all there is, I can imagine the discouragement that would set in. In fact, I would say the reason that things are the way they are is because there are so many people who think that this is all there is.
Interesting. All right, let's start with the easy question. And I say that jokingly for those not watching video. How do you know? How do you know this isn't all there is?
Right. Well, I think that I get asked this question a lot, actually. And I think that we are our own best example, or we are our own best evidence. We intuitively know, as an example, I'll go this way, that we exist beyond biology. I don't think I would say it is actually one of the most scientifically proved facts. And the reason I would say that is we each have this internal awareness of it. You know, C.S. Lewis once said, creatures do not have cravings unless satisfaction for those cravings exists. Right. And then he goes on to say, you know, like a baby feels hunger, whether such a thing as food. If there were no such thing as food, there would be no such thing as a craving for hunger, the hunger craving. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there's such a thing as water. If there were no such thing as water, there would be no desire to swim. But when it comes to humanity, we have within us all these desires, right, that are beyond biology. They are not biological desires. We have a desire to live forever. We have a desire to exist beyond. Those desires would not exist if the reality did not exist. So I would say, first off, we are our own best evidence. And I think that everyone has that internal witness. And it's only been in the last, to be honest, couple of decades that people have begun suppressing that awareness. And not because of science. There's an alternative, there's a different motive behind it, right? And then I would go further than that, just to kind of bring it a little bit more scientifically, I would say, at least following the scientific method, would be to say virtually every culture in the history of the world, whether they, you know, lived in huts, right, or built their houses out of stone or buffalo hide or wood or sod or snow, blocks of snow, right, whether they were, you know, fishermen on the coast, right, or farmers or hunter-gatherers, all across the world, every culture, without coercion, without outside influence, came to the same conclusion, that we exist beyond biology. Every culture has had grown an awareness that there is a part of us that exists beyond biology. And I would say that religion, the reason there's so many religions around the world, has been each culture trying to explain what they already know about themselves. And so in that sense, the awareness of our souls or the awareness of our non-biological selves predates religion in that regard. You know, religion is an attempt to explain what we know. And the fact that every, so in that word, the awareness of our non-biological selves is maybe a better way that more people could accept. So I'll use that phrase. We did not spread across the world like religion did, right? When we think of the Europeans believed in a soul. And then when they landed at Plymouth Rock, they came to a nation where there was already Native Americans living here who already believed in a soul. They brought a type of religion, but they did not bring an awareness of the soul. Hmm. Well, the Romans believed in a soul, and then they landed their legions, you know, north of the White Cliffs of Dover in Britain. They had an awareness of this. They did not bring an awareness of the soul to Britain. Britain already had an awareness of the soul, right? You can think of, look, all around the world, all of cultures, they all came to the same conclusion. That is as scientific a fact as you can get, right? If I'm sitting in my living room and my son comes running in and says, "Dad, did you hear that loud shriek?" I didn't hear anything. I'm like, "No, son, I didn't hear it." And I'm thinking, well, did that happen or was it something else going on? And then my wife comes in from the garden and says, "Hey, did you hear that loud shriek?" I'm like, "Oh, two testimonies. They weren't together. Maybe there was." And then there's a knock on the door and the neighbor comes in. "Hey, did you guys hear that loud shriek?" I'm like, "Okay, there was a shriek," right? We have three independent testimonies. It is a fact that there was some sort of shriek. I didn't hear it, but I know it existed because of independent witnesses. I would say multiply that thousands of times through all of human history and all cultures. And you go, we do exist beyond biology. It's as scientific a fact as there is.
So interesting. It's such a good answer. All right, let's unpack that. Let's dig into it a little bit, because that's the nature of the show, is to say, to hear fascinating things like that, that help us learn more about ourselves and this world and this universe and this existence, and try and make sense of them and question them and examine them in the spirit of trying to get to a deeper truth. So a couple things about that. So firstly, I think it's a super interesting, logical explanation. Do you ever wonder... So let's use the craving for food, right? That explanation that says if there wasn't such a thing as food, you wouldn't have a craving, you wouldn't have a hunger. Right. I think that makes sense to me. Do you ever think though that when it comes to us as humans and this understanding of the soul, or that there's something beyond this, that it's a misdirected form of something else? So we have embedded in us this need to survive, right? Which some people would argue is genetic or evolutionary or biological in some way. And then when you pair that with the form of consciousness and the level of sophistication of thinking that we have, that it has allowed us over time to make this strong assumption or understanding that there is something more, but it's not really that. Or maybe it's not a need to survive. It's a need. Well, I would say at the root, it's a need to survive, which then plays out as a need for comfort, because comfort is kind of a form of survival, or maybe higher on the hierarchy of it. And that desire to survive, that desire for comfort that's there, led us to saying, well, we don't understand this, so we have to make sense of it, which therefore means there has to be something more here. So in using like the literal logical proof that you set forth, it's possible that that craving or desire, that looking for something more, is actually rooted more in just the need to survive or something else that doesn't actually prove there's something more to this. I'm not saying that's true, obviously, but how do you think about that piece of it?
Yeah.
And maybe that's just wordplay that philosophers do, which is why people hate philosophy sometimes. It's like, you're just picking apart an argument. And I don't want to do that by any means. So I'm genuinely curious.
No, I do think it's wordplay, but I think it's a wordplay that people do for a reason.
Okay.
Right. I think ultimately there's a part of us that wants to, we want to keep our options open. Mm-hmm. We want to form a worldview that works best for us in this situation. And right. So I would say, my personal opinion, that the bend towards the modern day bend towards atheism or towards some sort of Gnosticism or it's definitely not a result of science, right? It's a result of mankind wanting to convince themselves of something that works best for them and their individual circumstance.
Yes,
right. And so oftentimes I think that all questions are valid, but just not all questions are altogether honest. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess would kind of be my thought toward that. So I think that, and obviously every argument will break down. We could always, you know, is there really such a thing as gravity, or is there something else at play? Right. Sure. You know, we could have that conversation and we could actually make it sound really intellectual.
Yeah.
But ultimately we know there's gravity, you know, that's the kind of, and so I'm not meaning to kind of belittle that, but
no,
I would say that there is that tendency within us to kind of question everything, but we need to ask, you know, is there wisdom behind this questioning? What is my motive behind this questioning? Right. And I guess that would be, I came from a very similar kind of thought pattern from my child. I was raised very poor. And from a very young age, I was asking the question, why? I was kind of a freak, to be honest. I wasn't out there playing the games like all the other kids. I was the kind of guy when all the company came over, all the kids would be out in the backyard playing tag, and I would be sitting on the kitchen floor, leaning against the wall, listening to the grownups talk. And that was kind of, and I had this deep, I wanted to understand why we live different than other people. And I wanted to understand why people did what they did. So from a very young age, I went into philosophy. You know, when I was like 9 and 10 years old, I was reading Aristotle and Plato and Confucius, and really kind of asking that question, why? But then, of course, what I really discovered was philosophy is itself asking the question, why? And then it's a whole lot of a hyperbole, right? Didn't find my answer there. So I moved to psychology. For a while, again, as a young, I was super into Freud for a while and his whole idea of the development of personality and the id and the ego and the superego and everything that Freud had to offer in that regard. And was just super intrigued with psychology. Once again, I discovered that it was, again, asking the question of why and not offering solution. It was just offering theory and amplifying the question of why. And then I moved into neuroscience, which is fascinating. I don't know if you've looked into neuroscience, but the neuroplasticity of the brain, its ability to shift and change, really as we focus on different things, you know, the way it can evolve over time, the influence of brain chemicals, unbelievable, right? But what I realized was all of those things, philosophy, psychology, neuroscience, these are things that people look to today for answers. Yes. But the truth of the matter is they are the study of mechanism. They are the study of theory and response. They are not the study of source. You know, and when we realize that, we go, wow. And it's great. It is very helpful to understand, hey, when dopamine is released into the brain tends to do this. That is good information, but that is mechanism. It's kind of like looking at imagine that we had never seen a car. You know, a car just kind of appeared in front of us and we didn't know how they existed. You know, to me, it's like philosophy is kind of like looking at the curve of the hood, you know, and the curve of the door, right? And psychology is kind of like looking at, you know, the connecting points where you have the tie rod ends, right? And you're looking at the steering wheel. And then neuroscience is looking at the electrical system, right? And the oils and that moves the pistons. And all that's great, but that car doesn't do nothing unless there's a driver in the seat. So it's, to me, so much of modern, what we call modern day academics, is the study of the car, ignoring the fact that in order for that car to do anything, it has to have a driver. That car does not move forward. That car does not stop. It does not turn right or left. It does not parallel park without the driver in the seat. The driver is the primary thing that needs to be studied in the movement of a car. And unfortunately today, like I said, I think there are a lot of us sincerely looking for answers, but what we're unwittingly doing is studying mechanism and not source.
It makes me think of two things. So I'm going to say both of them and let's see which one catches you and we'll go with it. So on that point of like, how do we know? And just using that analogy of the car, there's another analogy I've heard. If you're familiar with Richard Feynman, who was a physicist, won the Nobel Prize at one point. I think it was him that said it. He gives an example of, and he was an atheist, I believe. And he talks about a radio. Like, imagine you were on a desert island, an indigenous tribe, whatever it might be, and you came across a radio for the first time and you turned it on, you started hearing these noises and you started like getting sounds coming out of it. You would assume like, oh my God, this is magic. Like, obviously there's something magical here because you don't understand it. And the reality is that you just don't understand enough that if you could dig into it enough, you would see there's electrical things happening. There's radio waves going on that you have no knowledge of and never even knew existed and all these things. And I think he told that story or that analogy to kind of get people to understand that, like, we can explain everything if we dig deep enough into it. What I think you're getting at, though, which I very much agree with, and I don't know that he would disagree, is that eventually you're going to hit a point where, like, oh, there's radio waves. Okay, that's what's but where did the radio waves come from? And like, what started those and where did they come from? And to your point, eventually, like, you're never getting to the source of it, of what it actually is. Yeah. So that kind of makes me think of that. That's interesting. The second piece of that, which is maybe the more interesting question to where you started, that there's something more to this. And, you know, I asked the question, how do you know? maybe the how do you know isn't as important, right? Maybe the fact of how do we know that something created the radio waves? What do you do with the fact that, at least what I struggle with is, okay, even if I said, yeah, there is something more to this, maybe there is some creator that created this or whatever it is. If we can never know what it is, right? We can accept that there is something more, but we can never understand it. We can never know what it is. We can never know the source of those radio waves or the source of those radio waves, or ultimately, right, in your analogy, the driver of the car. Is it useful? Is it worth it for us to even consider that it's there? Like, what's the benefit of us knowing it's there if we could never understand it? Is it in effect that it's not there? Because to us, it doesn't really mean anything. Do you ever grapple? I mean, I'm sure you do, given the journey you've been on, but how do you handle that? How do you think about that? The fact that we may never actually fully understand it.
Right. Well, I would answer in two ways. First off, I mean, I at the end of the day, I'm a person of faith who believes that you're right. If there is a God, we can't hope to be aware of him, right? It's beyond our comprehension. However, I believe in a God that has made himself known. Mm. It's not so much my ability to try to by my will to get to know him. I believe that by his will, he has made himself known. So that would be one aspect. But on another aspect, I would say this, the reason why it's so important is because, well, I'll give you another non-biological craving that no other earthly creature has, but humans do. Purpose, right? The whole world is looking for purpose. But here's the basic thing that so many people seem to have missed. If you want to understand your purpose, you need to understand what you are, right? So as an example, the purpose of a hammer, right? We can look at it and go, okay, what is the purpose of this, right? Well, we need to know what it is. It was specifically designed to drive nails and to pull nails, right? And it's very interesting because as humanity, we can look at all the creatures on Earth and we can talk about the cycle of life and the purpose that every creature has in it, right? The purpose of, you know, predators kind of narrowing out the kind of the weak amongst, you know, the leaf eaters, you know, I'll use my son's vernacular talking about dinosaurs, right? To keep those herds healthy. We could say, oh, we'll talk scientifically about the purpose of that. We'll talk about the purpose of insects, which, you know, will help kind of a dead creature break down and then become part of the soil. We're great at looking at the rest of the world. I see the purpose in the elephant. I see the purpose in the ant. I see the purpose in this. Meanwhile, we're struggling to have purpose. It's like incredibly ironic, right? And so I believe that understanding your purpose is a prerequisite to actually having peace. Yeah. So we have to know. We have to come to some sort of conclusion that, and many people have, but it's just a matter of how firm is it? How honest is it, right? And so I think that it's something that we don't have the option to just be like, we can never know. Mm-mm. In fact, I would say, I've written a book called The Magnetic Heart of God, Understanding the Five Cravings of Your Soul. And these are the five cravings that I believe have propelled all of humanity to do everything we've ever done. It's deeper than psychology. It is a craving in the soul because it is non-biological. We cannot explain these cravings biologically, right? And my point being that we have cravings within us for a purpose. And one of those cravings is, in fact, for a purpose. And so we can't simply not answer this question. And we try, I think in our modern world, we try to entertain ourselves to a degree where it's kind of like we silence the noise of what is your purpose? What is your identity? You know, that voice inside us is that it's, does life have meaning? Right. And I think people have got to the point where it's been such a deafening question that we obsess over football, obsess over sex, whatever it is, you know, to quiet that noise. And yet we can never escape it. At some point, it catches up with us.
See, there's an interesting take on that, which, and you'll get the idea of the show, right? I like to ask the kind of contrarian questions, not because I disagree necessarily, because I think, A, for people listening, I'm sure they have these questions. And I want them to feel like, oh, we're really getting into it now. It's not just at a superficial level. And B, I think this is how we learn. I think, though, that purpose, that craving for purpose, and let's stick in the spiritual sense, you know, is the root of the evil, perhaps the devil, if you're talking in a Christian sense, in that, like, as you said, if you don't know your purpose, there's no peace. And this drive for us to know our purpose, I think you could make an argument that it's led people to do some really horrible things. This need to feel like I need to be something in this world. I need to mean something. I need to be significant. The ego, back to psychological terms, right, starts to form from that, Whereas, as you said, you look at the rest of nature and you say there seems to be a peace there. There's like an ecosystem at play. It works in harmony. And then our consciousness, our creation of these cravings, which appear to be non-biological, appear to be a lot of the root of the harm and the suffering that's happened in the world. Is that possible? Like, is there any view that you see it in that way? Or how do you
think that's a great question. I love the way you think. You know, first off, I guess I would say I would want to blow up the myth that the Earth is peaceful. Take humans out. It is a brutal. It is unbelievable. Have you ever seen an ant zoomed up close? It's like, oh my gosh, just the freakiest creature, you know, and it's designed to just like wreak carnage on everything it touches. It's like, the world is not peaceful, right? That would
it's true.
But on the other side of things, I believe when I talk about the five cravings of the soul, I think, again, you hit the nail on the head. These cravings are not good or bad unless we direct them towards good or bad places. Right. I think that is kind of all you mentioned significance. That's one of the cravings of the soul. I call it number four. Mm. This need in each human being to be feel special in some way. It cannot be, you know, again, you don't see that in nature very often. In the odd places you could argue you see it once in a while, but every single human being has a craving for significance. And if they don't feel they're special in some way, again, there is no peace. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I feel like, nature is not peaceful, but in order for us to have peace, we have to answer these questions about ourselves. And we're so busy. Like I said, we're done a great job answering these questions for the elephant, answering these questions right for the zebra, but we have not done a good job answering these questions for ourselves.
So you don't think, and maybe we can get into the five cravings as part of this, but If there was a choice, which I'm not saying there is a choice, but there was a choice to either have these cravings and kind of take the path you're saying, which is to understand them, which is to understand why they're there, understand the greater picture and our purpose and all that, or to turn them off, to say, don't have those cravings anymore.
Yeah.
The view you have is that we, however we define being better off, are better off having these cravings. It's not that the cravings are the source of the issue. Yeah. It's not that we'd be better off without them. It's just that if we don't accept them, understand them and try and kind of embrace them, that's the issue. That's how you see it.
Yeah. I'd say first off, you can't turn off the cravings because the cravings define us. Humanity is defined by these cravings. But then I would also say, yes, give an example for significance. It's what are you going to do with it? Are you going to pursue significance by being the person who loves well, right? The person who builds people up, and your significance is found by being that anchor and that strength for other people? Or are you going to pursue significance the other way? By I'm going to squash you, I am going to demean you, I am going to knock you down so that I can feel significant. What are you going to do, right? And so again, it's not the craving that's evil or bad or whatever words you want to use. It's how we choose to pursue it.
Let's use another example of that, which is real for me, and maybe it's just too individual, but I think you could abstract it out. Like, so those cravings, that craving for significance, in some ways, that's a bit of a, like, either side of the spectrum. Like, you could do something loving and positive and good, or you could do something hateful, harmful, hurt people. Sometimes I think of it even more narrower, where it's like, so let's take today as a perfect example. I have however many hours are left in my day in which I could spend that time. There is a craving, very real craving, to feel significant, to feel like there's a purpose and a meaning to me here. In some ways, I could spend that time with my family, taking care of my family. If I have a friend that's ill and I can spend time with him and care for him. And I just being honest, there's this part of me that says, like, yeah, I understand the beauty in that, but that's not going to make me significant, right? Or I could work on my business. I can work on this podcast and try and make a name for myself and be successful. And there's this poll that like says, as much as I understand conceptually that being loving, caring for people that are ill, that should be it. That should make me feel significant. It doesn't. It's not enough, at least, because I still feel pulled to do this other thing. How does that fit into this? Is that outside of it? Is that just society pushing me? Like, what is that?
No, like I said, I like the way you think. You're absolutely right. It is never enough. I can have, you know, we are never secure enough. You know, we never quite feel independent enough. We never quite feel secure enough. I mean, significant enough. We never quite feel innocent enough. Those are all cravings of the soul, which I talk about. But I believe that that's for a reason. That's why I call my book, The Magnetic Heart of God, understanding the five cravings of your soul. These are non-biological cravings, which by definition means they cannot be satisfied non-biologically or in biology, right? Mm-hmm. They have to be satisfied non-biologically. Sorry, I got that mixed up.
Yeah,
right? You cannot satisfy a non-biological craving with biological source, right? And so ultimately, you're right. I believe, like I said, the magnetic heart of God, understanding the five cravings of your soul, that God placed these cravings, you know, for some people, if they prefer to say the creator, our maker, you know, for some people, because I don't want to lose people in the conversation, mm-hmm. our maker put these cravings within us for the purpose of drawing us back to himself. Because only, I believe that when you break it all down, we were not designed like other creatures to kind of, live in this kind of full independence. We are designed at the core part of us to live in connection with our maker. And there's not enough money that'll fill the void. There's not enough sex that'll fill the void. There's not enough degrees you can earn that will fill the void. Ultimately, we are designed to live in connection with our maker. And to me, that is a profound and absolutely life revolutionary thought. Right. Because you're right. You hit the nail on the head. There's nothing you can do that's going to make you feel quite significant enough. Mm-hmm. And even when you attain it, there's always going to be the threat that you lose it. Mm-hmm. Right. If, as long as you're looking for it in places on earth, it's the same thing with security. Right. It doesn't matter how high walls I build. Right. How much money I have in my bank. The bank, I may have a moment of peace, a moment of satisfaction at that. But there'll always be the idea of, how can this be breached? Mm. Who's going to steal this? It's not enough. There's nothing on earth that can make it enough. And therefore, if biological things are not enough, the wise person is going to have to acknowledge, first off, we exist beyond biology. I have to start looking beyond biology for the answer to these questions.
Yeah, it goes back to where you were before. The fact that we have a craving like that, that it's never enough, means there must be something more. Right, yeah. Craving wouldn't be there, and I guess it goes to I'm blanking on the phrasing right now. Maybe you know, but like it's not a glitch in the way this thing was set up that we have that craving. That's not a mistake. Yeah. It's by design that it was there.
Yeah, and it didn't evolve into being, and it can't evolve out of being. Like I said earlier, you can't suppress this.
Right.
You can't wish it away. It will be there, and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, and we can look at that as some negative thing that we want to fight against, which I think was what a lot of humanity does, right? Or we can, if we really want to live with purpose, we can embrace it, right? And move towards saying, hey, I was made for a purpose. And that is a good and beautiful thing. And as long as I'm a hammer trying to be an orange, I will never have purpose. I will never have peace, right? I need to acknowledge that I'm a hammer, and that hammer is a beautiful, wonderful thing. And I need to embrace what I am for all that it is.
Yeah. And I think in many ways you're, for a lot of people, I'm sure you are, but you're describing the journey I've been on of that. Like, yeah, I think at some point you say, it feels like there's something more. It feels like there's something to this, but I don't know what it is. And then therefore you get discouraged. You start to become feeling like, well, then I don't even want to think about it anymore, because if I can't figure it out. So to that point of like, what is the practical thought for a person to figure out, like, how do I know I'm a hammer? How do I know what that purpose is so that I can fill this craving in a way that's non-biological? Because back to where we were before, I think so many people feel like, yeah, I'd love that. I'd love the peace that comes with that. I'd love whatever it is. How do I do it? Just tell me how to get there and I'll do it. And I'm sure it's obviously not that simple, but what is the practical things to take away from this that could help people in it?
Right. Well, I think the first thing to do is, we need to realize that we are all tangled in bias. We're all tangled in. So one of the cravings is, I call it number five, though they're not listed in ranking as to importance or strength. They're all equal, I believe, is the craving for innocence. Mm. We all desire to believe that we are good. We are not bad. We are good. Right. And so there's two sides to the innocence craving. There's the side that says, I am not a bad boy. And then there's a side of it that actually says it's more than that. Not only do I not want to be a bad boy, but I want to be a good boy. I want to be righteous. Right. And there is within us, think of this, virtually every argument you've ever had was because you felt somebody directly or indirectly insinuated that you were guilty of wrongdoing or wrong thinking. They touched that innocence nerve, and your response is to fight, right?
How dare you.
And accuse them of even more wrongdoing, Right. Because ultimately, I don't need to feel like I'm totally innocent. I just need to believe I'm more innocent than you.
Yes.
Right. So I accuse them of greater wrongdoing. Right. Or I flee. Right. Because I cannot be around someone who is constantly making me feel guilty. Right. Whereas that is very true relationally. And I believe it's the cause for basically almost a huge amount of our disruption, our division that we see in modern culture. Right. But I would say that also comes back to our idea of what we are allowed to think of ourselves. If I have been thinking, as an example, let's just pretend that I'm if I'm an atheist, which I believe there are very few atheists in the world, because atheism, again, just by itself is not honest. To say there's no God implies that I have all knowledge, right? And that's a pretty arrogant thing to do, because we clearly don't have all knowledge. So there's very few intellectual people that could actually claim atheism. Yes. Because
even scientists, the best scientists in the world will normally say, I couldn't say, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of a, yeah. But my point being, let's say pretend I'm an atheist. I come from a Christian background, so I'm going to be unbiased here, and I'm going to use a different faith. So say I'm an atheist, and then a Buddhist comes to me, and a Buddhist convincing me of something different. That atheist is going to have a hard time believing in the Buddhist viewpoint, because it means they're wrong. Mm. It means they've been wrong. Mm. And if I'm wrong, I'm two things. I'm not significant in my mind. This is where our souls are taking, right? Or I'm guilty of pursuing the wrong, heading in the wrong direction. That's why changing people's mind is so hard, because it's not simply a matter of, oh, this is right. It's like, no, I'm being struck in my significance. I'm being struck in my innocence, right? And those are powerful cravings. So it's very hard to change someone's mind, because it's not the facts that are the problem. It's that inner test, that inner, you know, craving inside me that says, I need to feel significant. I need to feel righteous. And in order to change my mind, I have to admit that I was wrong. And that's a blow, right? And so I feel like, I'm sorry if I went off on a rabbit trail. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question now, but.
You didn't. Well, it's actually a perfect trail to it, because the question I asked is like, so what do you do with that? And so let me interject here to say, a lot of people, whether they be psychologists or even Buddhists, just to use that as an example, would say, turn off the craving. That's the problem. The craving is the problem. It's your ego. Yep. It's that need to feel. But I think what you're saying is no. You're not turning off the craving. So what then is it? What do you do? So you have that craving. You need that innocence, significance. You have all that. That prohibits you from changing your mind. It prohibits you from seeing your biases. It touches all these nerves. So then what? What in your view? What's the right step in that?
Well, I can tell you what happened to me. As I mentioned, it drove me to philosophy. I didn't find the answer. It drove me to psychology. I didn't find the answer. It drove me to neuroscience. I didn't find the answer. It's driven me to faith. I believe I found the answer. I believe my questions are finally answered. And so for me, I would say for people, the only option you have is to investigate. The only option you have is to say, you know, like, let's pretend people who they're just like, hey, I'm not going to go the God direction right now. That's just not an interest. Well, I'm going to say, well, then you have to try somewhere else, right? Because these are the reason I find these five cravings so powerful. It's so important that we can name what we're looking for to start with. And I challenge everyone, test this for yourselves. Here's the five cravings of the soul: security, identity, independence, significance, innocence.
Pretty good.
All of humanity has been driven through life and time in the pursuit of and the protection of security, identity, independence, significance, innocence. They define love. They define peace. They define happiness. The problem is, most of the world doesn't. We all know we're looking for love. We all know we're looking for peace and happiness, but we've acted like we've treated them as ambiguous, or as if they are somehow custom for each one of us, right? This, I'll find love in this way, right? Or I'm going to discover my peace in this. Unfortunately, we are much more beautifully designed than that. These things are defined. You cannot have peace if you do not have these five cravings of the soul satisfied. The five cravings of the soul are the definition of love, right? They are the prerequisites to happiness. And so one of the things that I'm excited, I'm passionate about, is offering to people definition for the first time. This is what you're looking for. When you got married, you were looking for a place where you could experience together security, identity, independence, significance, innocence. The reason you got divorced was because you felt you didn't find it there. and you went looking somewhere else. They are the reason why you drove towards, like, pursued your career. And they're the reason why you're unhappy in your career now, right? It's those five cravings. So when we look at these, we can say, okay, I finally now know what I'm looking for. And so I would say to people, right, what you're looking for, I'm just going to say it one more time and then I'll stop being a broken record. Security, identity, independence, significance, innocence. I would suggest to you that ultimately these cravings can only be satisfied in God, in your maker.
And what does that mean? What does that mean, Corey, to say it can only be satisfied? Yeah. Like, for you individually, is it just a mindset that says, is it like a surrendering to say, yeah, the only way I fill these cravings is to know that God is the only thing that could give these things to me, so I give myself to God?
Yeah, and to walk in relationship. It's not enough to just think it, then it's to walk in relationship, which is why I would suggest to you. So I come from the Christian background. I'm a Christian. I would suggest to you that I know this, that there are piles of Christians who do not have peace. They do not have happiness because they believe in something. They've accepted something through a belief, but they do not live in connection with their maker. It's a totally different ballgame. It is very different to say, you know what, I believe that, like, in the Christian realm, Jesus died for my sins and rose again. That would be a common thing. That's one thing to say. It's another thing to say, I am going to walk daily with God, realizing that he is the ultimate source of my security. That being made in his image, he is the very source of my identity, right? That only within the loving framework that he has placed out can I pursue safe independence. That there is no greater sense of significance than found in the depths of his love for me, right? And going back to the core tenet of Christianity, it's only in the work that Jesus did on the cross that allows me to fully walk in innocence, realizing that I am now declared innocent, right? And so for other people, they, again, I accept, and I'm very, that people might say, hey, I'm not quite there yet, right? Or then I say, that's okay. But you have to understand, you have these five cravings and you're going to have them satisfied somewhere. I think there's only one place you can have them satisfied, and that is with your maker. But I'll consider it a win if people will disagree with me on that, but say they finally realize, okay, I have these five cravings. I have to go satisfy them somewhere. And then I say, go for it. That's the place to start. Know what you're looking for and then go look for it. Because right now people don't know what they look for. Yeah, they're looking for. They know they're looking for happiness. They know they're looking for peace, but they don't know what that is. Right. And I'm saying, I can tell you what it is if it's security, identity, independence, significance, innocence, all at the same time. That's the thing about it too. I can feel super secure in my home, secure in the arms of the person who loves me. I can know who I am, right? But if someone puts me in prison, you know, and hinders my independence, I don't have peace, right? You can, all of them have to be satisfied simultaneously. So they are five cravings, but ultimately they're one.
And your view is the only way to satisfy all five at once is through your maker. Like, there's no other way. So people, as long as they go on the search for it, they keep searching, eventually they'll end up in that place.
Yeah. And that's the beauty. And if I could bring a little bit of my faith into it, I would say, and that is the beauty of free will, is that your maker has said, you have free will, go do what you want to do. However, in his love, he placed these cravings inside of us. It's kind of like I call it the book, The Magnetic Heart of God. Right. Ultimately, we are going to run in all these different directions, but those cravings can't be ignored and they're going to suck us back. Right. Mm-hmm. And I believe that God did that in his love for us. Right. It's kind of one of those things where, as a parent watching my child, I want them to grow, have strong, independent ideals and different things like that. But ultimately I want them to be safe. Mm-hmm. Right? And God has placed this magnet inside of us. Right. So that we don't wander off a cliff. Mm-hmm. There's always that pull back to him. And some people spend their entire life fighting that pull, insisting, nope, I will find significance in my career. I will, right? But the day will come when it's like, yeah, you experienced it for a while, but it's gone now.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Well, let me ask you this, as we're coming towards the end, Corey. What is it, again, for people that, because there are people out there that are skeptical, that are at least stated as atheists, or just, when you say walking with your maker, right? I think that was the phrase you used. On a day-by-day basis, A, what does that actually mean for you? Is it following the gospel? Is it, is it what makes it tangible for you? And then B, the effect of that is that gives you the sensation that those cravings have been met when you do that. So probably A, the more important question here, but just curious, is that the effect it has? The cravings are still there, but it feels like I'm feeding those cravings through this.
Right. Yeah, okay. That's where they're satisfied. And it's not, I do not say this as a flippant statement. Ah, just believe in God and everything's going to be good. No,
right.
there's also a nature inside of us that rebels,
sure.
You know, and seeks to drive away. So we do, to a certain degree, I would say that the old image of like Satan or the devil with a pitchfork and a tail, like that's just mythological crazy stuff. But if I could just philosophically use the old image of like an angel on one shoulder, sure, and the devil on the other, you know, whispering in our ears, it's like, what are we going to choose? Well, that's kind of a silly image. I would say that in actual practice, there is, to a certain degree, inside of us, those two things. There is that pull towards, no, I am going to do this my way. I am going to, you know, and then the pull that pulls us, you know, back to our maker. And so I do believe that there is a war going on within each one of us to a certain degree.
So what does it look like for you to be pulled towards your maker when you do it the right way, or whatever phrasing is used? Like, what is it? How do you know you're walking with your maker?
Right. Well, again, for me, and this is the conclusion that some people can't accept, and I'm okay with that, as long as you can understand these five cravings. Yeah, for me, I believe that ultimately the will of God is where peace is. That's been my life. I've gone through times of great poverty. I've gone through times where I've been highly recognized. I've gone through times where people have betrayed me. I've gone through times where I can say, I now know the hurt of what it feels like to be the betrayer, right? I've experienced many things in life, and the anchor for me that holds me, that kind of gives me peace and assurance in the midst of all of it, is knowing that I was created by a God, a good God who loves me. And when I acknowledge that his intellect, his will, his kindness is greater than mine, but that he welcomes me to tap into his will and his greatness and his kindness, right? That is where I find satisfaction for my cravings.
And maybe last question, I'm going to press on it just because it's the nature of the show and it's what I like to do. Like, do you, I'm sure you do. You're too well-read. You've explored this too much, even in what you just said there, which I think is a beautiful sentiment. And I think I'm evolving to a place where I understand that there's going to be people that hear that and they're like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, you're just saying words that are nice about God. And like, it's just, what actually are you, what does it actually mean? And I've come to believe, and tell me what you think, like, it's hard to put into words. It's hard to articulate what you're trying to express in words and get somebody to understand it unless they've experienced it. But what do you do with that for the people that say, I still don't know what that means? Of course, I'm on board. The five cravings are there.
Yeah.
I want to meet them. I understand it's non-biological. It's walking with my maker. Tell me how to do that. How do I actually walk with my maker? Is there no answer to that question that could like be prescribed to an individual person that says, this is what you do? It's different for each of them. Or is it just something that can't be described in words? Like, how is it?
Yeah, I'll give two quick answers. One is self-serving, and the other one will be. So the first self-serving one is buy my book.
Buy the book.
You got a lot. There's a lot of answers there. The second one being for people who are like, you know, I hear you, but I'm doing this anyway. I'm going this direction, right? What I would say to you is, God is patient, and I've been there. And so I accept that you might feel at the moment you need to wander. I would warn you, there's danger and heartbreak ahead of you, right? But if you are going to pursue this elsewhere, God is patient, I'm patient. And when you come back around to realizing, oh my gosh, I thought I was going to experience this in this person or in this place or in this thing, when the day comes when you realize that isn't the place where you're finding the peace and happiness you thought, there is no shame in coming back to your maker. You've heard the story of the prodigal son, no doubt, right? The whole idea of the son, forget you, dad, I'm going to do my own thing. I think that is each one of us, right? And I would let you know that the day will come when, like that prodigal son, you're going to find out that it's not, you know, life doing life your way isn't going to be give you the answers you were hoping for, but your father's waiting for you to come back and he celebrates when you do.
I think that's a beautiful way to end it, Corey. I'll say, I say this often on this show, but I love these conversations. I really do. I mean, particularly when it's somebody who's as knowledgeable as you are, as thoughtful as you are, has looked at this from so many different angles and obviously has a lot of conviction. it's such an enjoyable experience to understand it, to get a peek inside your psyche. But when we're talking about things of this significance, of purpose of life, meaning of life, what is this? What's beyond this? To me, I can't think of anything more important. So I appreciate you a ton for the book. Obviously, there'll be a link to that in the show notes and all that for people. But for the conversation, for the work that you're doing, I think it's awesome.
Thank you, Terry. It's been a privilege to be here.
I appreciate that very much. I hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
You too.
All right. Hey, thanks a ton for listening to the episode. I really do appreciate everybody that listens. And I think it's super cool that people want to hear conversations like this. They want to hear us talk about values and different perspectives and really just philosophical thinking. I'm kind of on this mission or journey to bring philosophy back to the forefront, maybe even make philosophy cool again, because I just think there's so much value in thinking about our thinking, questioning and challenging ourselves more, pondering these big picture questions about life. So in that spirit, I'm trying to expand that mission a little bit, and I created a Patreon account that would be awesome if you check out. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's pretty simple though. It's patreon.com/whatsthevalue. And the idea is for people that maybe want to learn more about philosophy, dip their toe in it a little bit, or maybe you already love it and just want to get more of it, check it out, because there's kind of a tier for everybody. Whether you just want to get like a quick philosophical video or a thought of the day, maybe you want to email or text me some questions and get some thoughtful philosophical responses, or if you want to have a live one-on-one chat over Zoom. We're even doing group discussions where we kind of do group philosophical debates and discussions and ponder some of those big questions. So check it out. See if it's something you might be interested in. As I said, I just love to bring more philosophy into our lives, and I thought this might be a cool way to do it. Whether that's your thing or not, and you're into Patreon or not, I really do appreciate a ton that you listen and check out these episodes. So I appreciate it greatly, and I hope you have an awesome day.